similar to Pittsburgh. It was a tale of two halves, especially defensively. But it's the NFL. We found a way to make enough plays at the end to win it. And just to me, it speaks to the character of the men in the room, the resiliency, the poise, the focus. That I think a lot of teams would have shut it down, given what we faced at halftime. But I did tell them after the game they got to stop doing it.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Yes, they've got to stop doing it for all of our sake, but we'll take the wins any way we can get them here for the Cleveland Browns. Resiliency, heart, Matt, you harped on that. This team has it in spades. They've proven it. It's twice now. They've been down by more than 25 points and have not given up both times. One, they tied that game against Pittsburgh, ultimately didn't win, and here the big win against the Tennessee Titans. This team, man, I like them to, you know, be even with somebody at half, sure, and then go on a 26-0 run and have a nice, comfortable victory for it.
You know
change.
What it means to me? It's like, it's, we don't like losing. We don't like being a failure. So we'd rather compete and fight and fight. And we saw them lose twice and win twice. You know, and again, I just, you keep comparing to last year. What did we do? We saw weakness. You know, we see things that need to be fixed. We're surprised by how well the offensive is doing and how, I won't say bad, but how many question marks there are defensively, but they're fixable. What you got to love is the character of the coaches, the character of the guys going into this fight.
And they've got it in spades, ladies and gentlemen. That's why the Browns find themselves here at 2-2. Their four games have been decided by a total of 2 points now when you do the positives and minuses on all four games. Absolutely ridiculous. Fun fact, because I looked, I was like, they have to have the smallest, you know, plus minus in the league. Arizona's actually 86-86 even through four games.
Really?
The Arizona Cardinals. Yeah, just interesting. Just saw that when I was looking at the standings there. Spokes, OBM, Ohio Business Machines and Sharp Copiers. When it comes to Browns fans, their loyalty for our team, it's unconditional. So is the loyalty that OBM provides to its customers with OBM's exclusive no-risk guarantee and 7-year security blanket. Teamed with OBM's designation as the only Sharp Platinum level service provider in town, so OBM can tackle any of your copier problems and you'll never scramble to keep your office running. Now the preferred document services provider of the Cleveland Browns, visit OhioBusinessMachines.com or call 216-485-2000. We want to talk to you now here on a huge victory Monday, 216-578-0850. Tom in California, welcome to CBD.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. First, I wanted to say thanks for making sure that the show gets posted every day. I'm at Homey Domey, and I
Oh, yeah. I'm glad that it is working out. You know, we made sure everybody knew what was going on, and fortunately, it seems to be we're firing on all cylinders there. So, yes, thanks for listening and for getting the podcast and getting it down on the app. It's all good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Second thing, I just wanted to say that, you know, as bummed as I was when Vic left, I have to admit that the show is actually better. Not necessarily by subtraction, but, you know, Mr. At Matt Wilhelm 57 has really brought a new dimension to the show that I think is refreshing. And instead of being sort of a talking head like you see on some of the other ESPN guys, the Jaworskis that run their mouth and so forth, his insight is calm and delivered, and I'm loving it.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man.
We're having a blast. Yeah, Matt's doing a heck of a job. Thank you so much, Tom.
No worries. So my question is this, basically. You know, I read Collision Low Crosses and started going back and looking at some of the old Jet stuff. And I think the question is, do you think that Petton O'Neill scheme, has problems with mobile quarterbacks? Because, I mean, Locker was killing us. Then he goes out, and then Charlie Whitehurst, who's not nearly as mobile, we were able to get to him later. But it seems that whenever there's somebody that not necessarily runs but can keep the play alive, it kills us. You talked about double moves earlier and the time you needed to execute those, but it seems like, you know, we've got a problem. We lose containment on the quarterback. I just wanted to get your take on that. Thanks,
I think that that's the key. I think the last thing you said is the key, losing containment on the quarterback. I don't think it's a scheme issue. I think at times, and if you go back and watch the tape or watch the game, or you get the NFL game rewind and you can watch the All-22 version yourself, you can do that at ClevelandBrowns.com, you'll see that at times players kind of freelance. There were certainly a couple plays where the edge rusher, in a last-ditch effort to get to the quarterback, when they had outside leverage and outside contain, decided to do a move back to the middle. They get bottled up and created a lane. I think it calls for a lot of discipline, just like any man-to-man scheme.
Yes.
Does. When you're playing man on the back end, you need discipline up front if you don't have somebody spying the quarterback, because you need to maintain the integrity of the gaps and the lanes. And if you end up supposed to, you're the guy with outside contain on one side, and you decide the last second to try to make a move to the inside, and you get pinned and don't get there, that's just a wide open lane. I think it's more a man-to-man scheme thing than it is this scheme, but it always depends upon guys up front maintaining the integrity of their assignments.
And I think, for me, there's one word comes to mind in this, and it's communication. And that's communication to the D-line, communication to the DBs, and also, too, communication from DBs, and this is off-the-field communication, between the DBs and the D-line. And I think everybody just needs to be in tune with the scheme, and that means the D-line, like, when we're in met, like, because I just know the mentality of a defensive lineman. When I hear the front or the stunt, a defensive lineman's ears turn off. Okay, I got my assignment in the call. I know what I need to do, and they shut their ears off. You know, but they don't understand the back end coverage that's associated with that front and the stunt. Meaning, if we're in man press, any type of man, like I said, those guys, those defenders are going to have their back turned. So I know when I hear the stunt or the front that I have to keep my gap integrity, because if exactly. I lose my gap on a move inside or a move outside and I open up this, you know, the big gap in the middle, or and they smash down one edge, that quarterback can extend the play, which makes it very hard on those DBs to have to cover for 5, 6, and 7 seconds down the field. So I think it's communication, and it's just a matter of a Joe Hayden walking up to a Barkevious or a Kruger and go, hey, dude, when you made that move on that play where they completed X, like, you're throwing me under the bus by making that move, man.
Right.
You know, or it's, you know, Joe talking to his position coach talking to the defensive line coach, and so on and so forth. So everybody needs to be in tune with the full defensive scheme, and when it all happens together, which I'm sure Coach Jim O'Neill and Mike Pettine want sooner than later, that's when you see this defense flourish. But right now, everyone's playing essentially for themselves, and they're only listening to what they need to hear, but you have to hear the whole play.
And that's what it is. It's assignments that are blown, a little bit of freelancing, and not maintaining, as you said, the gap integrity up front. That's why it's happened at times. Now, this defense can also do very well with mobile quarterbacks, because you can suffocate them if you suffocate the receivers outside, and then you can pin your ears back and go get them. But good observation, Tom, and thanks for the comments on the show. Stan in Brooklyn. What's up, Stan? Let's go to Mike in Zena. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Nathan?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. It's the first time I've called.
Thanks for calling up.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just called to give the Browns kudos, man. They're really looking good this year.
They certainly are, and it is fun to see a team that seems to have a unification of direction, a team that, as you said, hates losing. Now, I'd like them to kind of make sure they try to develop that hate right when the game begins, as opposed to, you know, at halftime. But nonetheless, we'll take it as it comes with this Browns team. And again, a big win, but it's a different looking team. It's a team that has a lot of fight. I think there's good leadership, and I think this shows a lot of buy-in. They aren't folding the tent. And it also says to me, these are guys willing to accept personal responsibility, because as players, if you were in a system where you felt that it was the scheme, and I think this says a lot about the people who are saying, well, it's the scheme, the players would just tune out at halftime and just check out and be like, whatever, it doesn't even matter what I do.
Yeah.
But you almost get the sense that they know it's on them, and they're the ones that have been dropping the ball to pick it up, and that's why you see that fight in the second
half. You're right.
Half.
It's them tweaking their play. It's them tweaking themselves personally within that scheme that is truly the tale of two halves. Okay, the same mistake that I made on this same defense in the first half, you know, that I knew gave up a big run, a big play, or I lost contain, I'm now going to do what I'm supposed to do and play within myself and within that scheme. And you see a positive play, a sack, a 2-yard gain, whatever it might be. So you can see, simply by following in line and doing what you're supposed to do, the difference between wrong and right.
Absolutely. Let's go now to Mike in Youngstown with us here on Victory Monday on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Feels good, don't it?
Oh, it does feel good, Mike. You're darn right it does.
Hey, for us, it was real good. We had Fitch beat Maslin, Ohio State won, and the Browns won.
That's right. Strong
great
weekend.
Hey, our journeyman quarterback, he's doing pretty well for himself, huh?
No question about it. He's playing very, very well right now, Brian Hoyer.
I just wonder what you guys think. This is a little bit about what you're talking about. I think we pretty much rushed the quarterback well. Even it just seems like once in a while, it seems like our rushers are coming upfield a little bit too, coming upfield too much. I don't know if you think they are or not, because the second half, it just seemed like, we had more, like you said, staying in your own house, minding your own business. And I also think that we're not the only team around the league that's having trouble with wide open receivers, because I really think it's going to take more than four games to be able to, for these DBs, to learn something that they've been doing their whole lives, being able to, use their hands a little bit, now not being able to. I just wonder what you think.
I think you're absolutely right, and I know an interview by Jim Leonard, I think 2 weeks ago after the Ravens game, talking about buying into the system. Jim Leonard said himself, 6 to 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks to see this coverage, that back end, again, having that communication with the front end to see this defense truly flourish under Coach Pettine and O'Neal. And just to get back to the pass rush subject is, I think Kruger's doing an amazing job. And in some cases, he's doing too well. He's collapsing those tackles so hard that sometimes it knocks him off balance. They're probably latching onto him so they don't fall on their backs, which actually created a short corner for Jake Locker on a couple times. And I think him and Sheard kind of do the same thing. Mingo might be the one that's most guilty of running upfield, because he's really good going 100 miles an hour in one direction. And in some cases, if it's the wrong angle, it's by the quarterback. Then he's having to revert himself back and redirect himself to the quarterback. But I think that Kruger is imposing his will on those tackles, and you have to love that.
He's been great. I thought we saw the best of Armani Bryan, who got to line up outside a little bit more. I wouldn't even mind seeing Armani Bryan at times line up in that 3-4 rush linebacker spot, kind of like an Alden Smith out in San Francisco. I thought he had some great hustle plays, had a big sack as well. He had his best game of the season, and he was a standout in training camp, got his most significant action of the season, and I thought delivered his very best game, did Armani Bryan, in this big Browns victory. Let's go to Scott in Marysville. Now, Scott, welcome to the show.
How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Joe Hayden, he kind of reminds me, I'm not sure about this, correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard Joe got a new contract, I don't know if it was last year or this year, and again, I might be wrong on that.
This year? Yeah, huge extension.
I don't know. It's almost as if, and I don't know if you guys feel this way or not, I kind of do. But when Josh Cripps got his new contract, after he got his contract, he just seemed to not do what he used to do before he got his contract. And I'm all thinking, and I love both those guys, but it just seems like Hayden, it's almost as if he's just like, well, I got my money, and ain't no sense killing myself, so I want to spend some of this money when I get to be 50 years old or 60 or whatever. But, I love him to death, but it's just like, what's going on, Joe? You're missing some stuff that guys like you are not supposed to miss. Guys like me, because I'm not any good. But you are. And the reason why you got that little super mouse on your arm is because you're bad. But there's been several games he's not what he should be.
I would say that Joe Hayden is as troubled by where he's been as anybody here. I think that he takes a lot of pride in being locked down Joe. He wants to get better. I think that he would tell you he still has room to improve. It hasn't been the best start to the season for Joe Hayden, and he's the first one to admit that, and I think it is very important to him to turn that around. I want to say this, though. I thought the way that he went in and had some type of an ailment, came back out, and showed a lot of heart and a lot of toughness and played, I thought, very well down the stretch for this team, I thought was big. And you want to see Joe Hayden become that guy again. I thought other than the touchdown where he kind of got a step too shallow, I think, in that zone, he had the pass interference, which, by the way, was a garbage call. That ball landed not even just outside the thick white line out of bounds. There's another white line that's where you can stand for media people. I know it well. And it was on that white line.
Seven yards out of bounds.
Nowhere near – completely uncatchable, and not even within the realm of possibility of being caught. Not even Manute Bol could have caught it and dragged the feet, for those of you who like obscure basketball references. But I think that this is a big game for him against Antonio Brown. It's a game where we're going to need Joe Haden to be at his best, and it's a guy who's given him a lot of fits. But I think at least this week we saw some improvement from Joe, and we want to see more of it going forward.
I agree. I think he's playing consistent. And again, even look at last night's game. You know, you see Revis, you see Sherman. Everybody's looking to those guys making all the money to be perfect. You know, and this is not a league where you can play perfect at any position or for an entire game. And I think that just two things from my personal observation is, one is I think his confidence has wavered a bit, and his belief in himself to make all those plays and be the shutdown corner just because of some inadequacies in his game thus far this season. And the other thing for me, and I say that because of the touchdown that you're talking about, is Joe's not believing what he's seeing, you know, for whatever reason, which means he's playing with a question in his head.
Thinking.
And that might, yeah, he might be. So he's thinking in these coverages because the route and the way in which it broke down, you know, you could immediately look to Buster Screen, but Buster Screen immediately looked over his shoulder like, hey, dude, where were you? You know, that's your responsibility. And I think it's just, there's just an inkling of doubt in his belief in what his responsibility is that's keeping him from being the player we all think Joe can be.
I do think that that's true, but I also think that it's one of those things where he just needs to get his hands on a ball, and I think it'll snowball.
Sure.
And he did a great job on the last drive, the play where Whitehurst got out of the pocket and wanted to get Nate Washington deep. Did a great job getting back there, and obviously the throw ended up going outside, so it was incomplete. But that was a big play. Gip with a big play when he heaved it down the middle of the field, because you never know with these refs. They can throw that pass interference. He went up, knocked the ball down. Great job there, but I think – hopefully this defense will pick it up. We're going to keep saying that because this offense has been great. If that defense comes along with them, look out, folks. We could talk about a nice little run here.
That's right.
In this part of the schedule. When we come back, we're going to go to three questions with three-time Super Bowl champion Gerard Cherry about the Browns' historic win over the Tennessee Titans from yesterday.